Zurkunkshetrapatra. Among the four summits, Deshekyawopa and Zurkunkshetrapatra, like the bell ringer among the bulls, was the prime successor of the mantra holder Ukpalumpa. He was born in Yerutsang in 1014. Wood male tiger year, to the accompaniment of wonderful omens. His father was Thakpagomchen, who sometimes lived as a mendicant, and his mother was Majosherapki. In his seventh year, he learnt to read and write, and in his ninth, he learned to chant the rite of the peaceful and wrathful deities. Once, in his 13th year, while he was sitting in bed reading a book, his betrothed ran to him and said, "The field is flooded. How can you lie there?" Wearing his new trousers, Zurkunkpa crossed the flooding waters, and he began to divert the water from the house. But she scolded him, saying, "You did not even change out of the clothes which were made by my labor. They're ruined." Zurkunkpa replied, "If you care more about the cloth than about me, have it." And he threw the trousers away. She became angry and said, "This is an insult." And she ran away to her native place. Zurkunkpa was utterly disillusioned with the world. He took her spindle down from a rafter and shouted after her. He remained suspended between hope and doubt, not knowing whether to call her back, but in the end he handed her the spindle, saying, "It is said that a man must have the male wealth and a woman the female wealth. Take your spindle." She returned to her own land in despair. Then, without consulting his father, without taking provisions from his mother, and without seeking the approval of friends, Zurkunkpa set out, carrying only his wolfskin coat, to meet Zurpoche. On the way, he joined company with two nomads from Tanakh, who were bringing turquoise and copper, and a native of Shang, who bore armor. When they arrived there, Zurkunkpa had only the wolfskin coat to offer. While the other three offered their grand presents, the guru said, "Let us see whether or not they are disgusted with the world. Bring each of them some ale stew and vegetable soup." The two nomads had no desire to eat. The Shangpa ate a little, but Zurkunkpa ate the lot. At this, the guru said, "Put aside the wolfskin coat and the armor. but return the turquoise and copper to their owners. The nomads went away displeased, saying, "The return of our presence is a sign that he will not teach us the doctrine." Consequently, they abuse Zurpoche's teaching. The master asked Zurkungpa, "What is your clan?" Zurkungpa feared that it would be contentious to say that he was of the same clan as the guru. So he said, "I am just a very small Zur." The nickname stuck. Knowing him to be worthy, Zurpoche made him study. He developed supreme intellectual brilliance. At first, because of extreme poverty, he subsisted by gathering up the tormas scattered by the guru and making ale stew of them. But the other students complained to the master. The sour smell of ale, they said, lingers on his breath. Neither does he offer ale to the guru, nor does he give any to his spiritual brothers. Therefore, the guru said, "Zurkungpa, today you are to go and collect wood." In Zurkungpa's absence, he had them search the cottage, but it is said that all they found was a skull cup full of ale stew underneath a tattered blanket. At this, the guru said, "Zurkungpa, if you have nothing to eat, come to my own hearth. I would defile the guru's property," he answered. So it was that he bore the burden of constant austerity. One day the guru brought a rosewood bowl, which could hold 9 handfuls, and said, "Do you have anything to drink?" When offered ale stew, Zurpoche drank 2 bowls full. "Bring more," he said, and continued to drink. Then he said, "Is there any more?" "There's about 1 quart," answered Zurkungpa. "Now that is not enough. If it were enough, your merit would be the greatest in Tibet. Nonetheless, because of your veneration of me, your merits will still be great." He gave Zurkungpa 3 loads of barley and said, "When this barley is finished, you will not be without necessities." Zurkungpa persevered day and night in all of his studies and in meditation. Because he was an emanation, the expanse of his discriminative awareness unfolded. But although he had inconceivable spiritual experiences and realizations, Zurkungpa could not even afford the supplies for copying books. At that point, Larje Zurpoche said, "In the place called Fengi Kangon lives a wealthy lady meditator named Komo Yumo and her daughter. You should stay with them." "I will not be a householder," replied Zurkungpa. "Do not be narrow-minded," said the master. "I know the divisions between what the teacher permitted and what he forbade. If you use the resources of those two, you can ask for empowerments, copy books, and receive the entire doctrine without remainder. They will both acquire merit for it, and you will accomplish your own purpose. That would be best. Zurkungpa obeyed, and all his wishes were fulfilled. Then the guru said, "Now, don't stay there anymore. Bring your books and other necessities of worship here gradually, and then come to me." "But is it right to do so?" asked Zurkungpa. "Those two have been very kind." "Do not be small-minded. You will have the power to benefit the world. In this degenerate age, you must propagate the teaching of the Buddha and benefit many beings. How could you be more grateful to them? But if you just hide out there, you will succeed in helping neither yourself nor others." Zurkungpa obeyed the command exactly, and the guru's intention was precisely fulfilled. On one occasion, Larje Zurpoche saw Zurkungpa circumambulate a stupa near his residence. His feet were moving one cubit above the ground. The guru realized that he was an emanation and thought, "It is a great wonder." He was highly delighted. So it was that when Zurkungpa wandered afar and was tormented by intense heat in a desolate valley, he was offered a refreshing drink by the local deities. When he went to meditate on a lonely mountain peak and grew hungry, he was offered food. So he easily achieved whatever his heart desired and thought. "Now, if I act on behalf of the world, I will succeed." Lama Zurpoche too said, "Now you must teach." Zurkungpa taught the sutra which gathers all intentions and could gather at once 300 disciples displaying the text. At the time, the guru praised Zurkungpa greatly, but certain people were somewhat disrespectful and said, "The guru praises his own nephew too highly." Zurpoche knew that they would incur great demerit by slandering a guru. It so happened that on one occasion, the master and all his disciples went to attend a religious festival in a place called Emar Dorjepo. In a gully, there was a vermin-infested bitch and her puppies. Lama Zurpoche only petted the bitch, but Zurkungpa killed her and the puppies and then swallowed the vermin. The others said, "Such a lunatic as this Zurkungpa has been appointed to explain the doctrine. Even our benefactors will lose their devotion." But the guru replied, "Even I knew the dogs were bound for the evil destinies, but I could not liberate them. Zurkungpa has done so, and it is a great wonder." At that, Zurkungpa adopted a gaze, and the dead dogs were turned into offering goddesses. He vomited up the vermin, and they flew off into the sky. Zurpoche said, Now, are you not astonished? But they replied, it is merely an optical illusion. Afterwards, they came to Shang River, which was flooding. By his miraculous power, Zurpoche threw a skull cup to the slope of the opposite bank and said, I shall entrust my college to whoever retrieves it. The other three summits could not reach it, but Zurkungpa walked across, his feet not touching the water, and retrieved the skull cup. Zurpoche urged them to compete in the power of levitation. Among the other teachers and meditators, including the four summits, there were those who could travel without their feet touching the ground. But Zurkungpa ascended into the air as high as a palmyra tree and was the first to reach the hermitage at Trampa. At that, the other three summits began to believe in him and then served the guru completely by obeying each of his commands. One, Zurkungpa received a prophecy in three stages concerning a sacred location. But because that yogin who had realized emptiness was free from deliberate grasping, he dismissed it all as delusion. Finally, 5 16-year-old girls, adorned with bone ornaments, appeared. They were playing damaru and dancing. They said to him, Brother, if you meditate at Riwo Gudu, you will accomplish the goals of yourself and of others. Then they pointed to Trakgyawo with their fingers. Seeing that there were 9 peaks, 9 rivers, and 9 meadows, Zurkungpa knew it to be a sign of the completeness of the 9 successive vehicles. That Trakgyawo, he said, resembles the transcendent Lord, the great glorious Haruka, surrounded by the 8 Gauri. Therefore, if I practice there, accomplishment will come swiftly, and the blessing will be great. Moreover, since the nature of samsara is suffering, I must cut off worldly entanglements to achieve the goal of future lives. Social diversions and fame are useless. In the short run, it is difficult to save face, and ultimately it is worthless to do so. Therefore, I will meditate in solitude. In trusting his disciples to the care of the 3 useless men, and commanding them to preserve the exegetical teaching of the doctrine, he went off to Trakgyawo. Arriving there, Zurkungpa entered exclusively into practice. So, the danger of the local divinity's magical power became very great. However, to such great bulls among accomplished masters, both dream and the waking state have the same savor, in that they are fictitious. One night, Zurkungpa dreamt that a black man appeared on the peak of Trakgyawo, grabbed his 2 feet together, whirled him overhead, and threw him. He landed in a wide plain in the river valley of Thok. When Zurkungpa awoke, he really found himself in the midst of the plain and had to climb back up. Despite this great magical display, he remained undeterred. Again, when a scorpion the size of a young goat filled his hermitage, Zurkungpa's decisive realization of cause and effect became manifest. He seized the scorpion by the claws and tore it in half, saying, "Repenting of each non-virtuous sin, I tear the evil scorpion asunder." In this way, he mocked those who rely on the words rather than the meaning. He threw the scorpion away, whereupon all the pieces were transformed into Vairocana Buddha and dissolved into space. On another occasion, when Zurkungpa was invaded by an army of ants, he told his attendant to bring a mallet, and with it he crushed the ants. The attendant felt disgusted and said, "Think of the sin." Zurkungpa replied, "If you had no faith in that, I'll do it this way." And he popped the ants into his mouth and blew out, whereupon all of them arose in the form of Vajrasattva and departed into the sky. At that, the attendant developed great faith. By his inconceivable miraculous abilities to kill and resurrect, Zurkungpa bound three local divinities who were siblings under an oath of allegiance. They actually revealed their forms and prostrated at his feet. Even today, there exists a spring which arose where Zurkungpa pierced a rock with his kila. And when he performed the practice of the meditative absorption of the seals, according to the secret magical net, he had a vision of Vajrasattva, who filled the valley of Thok. Because Zurkungpa had attained the activity field in which appearances are exhausted, he could transform his body into a storm of fire, water, wind, or earth. All appearances radiantly and resplendently partook of the nature of Vajrasattva, and the power of his positive realizations increasingly developed, but he realized that in fact they were not reliable. Appearances, mind, and reality merged into a single savor, and he reached the level on which his intentions were exhausted. He could move unobstructed through earth, stone, mountain, and rock, fly like a bird in the sky, and so forth. So it was that Zurkungpa obtained independence with respect to the five elements. On one occasion he said, "One month from today a worthy disciple will arrive. Then later on a spiritual benefactor named Bhagatong, who is an adherent of the dialectical school, came to a religious festival in Thok. He sent an intelligent student to debate with Zurkungpa. The student pointed at a pillar and said, 'Let the pillar be the topic.' Surkungpa said, "The pillar is the topic. Do the deluded perceptions of worldlings, who are discrete entities, such as yourself, the pillar appears as a discrete entity. But I am an adept of the great perfection, which concerns what is manifest in and of itself, and impartial. According to this, there can be no ontological verification of the pillar." So saying, he waved his hand and passed through the pillar without obstruction. The student was unable to speak for astonishment. He acquired exceptional faith and became Zurkungpa's disciple, Matok Jangbar. Concerning Zurkungpa's disciples, there were 4 pillars. Concerning Zurkungpa's disciples, there were 4 pillars, 8 rafters, 16 beams, 32 planks, 2 great meditators, 1 great boaster, 2 simple ones, 2 venerable ones, 3 useless men, and many others. The 4 pillars were originally students of the spiritual benefactor, Gyungpo Trasi, who were great dialecticians and intellectually very sharp. When Deshek Gyawopa, i.e. Zurkungpa, and the spiritual benefactor Gyungpo met in Yanggru at the invitation of a patron, Gyungpo sent the 4, commanding them to go and refute Zurkungpa, who, he said, was a proponent of erroneous doctrines. When the 4 entered the presence of the master, he happened to be wearing a fur coat turned inside out. At this, one of them said, "Which doctrinal tradition has the custom of wearing an inverted hide?" "The hide is just as it has always been, so it is not inverted. It is your dogma which confounds inside and outside." One of the other students said, "Very well, but let us discuss the doctrine." To which Surkungpa replied, "The essence of the doctrine is inexpressible and limitless. How can one discuss doctrine?" At that, Kyoton asked, "Well then, according to your tradition of the great perfection, is not meditation most important?" "To what object do I adhere?" Surkungpa asked in response. "All right then, but is it non-meditation? Is there anything that distracts me?" was Zurkungpa's reply. And Kyoton, despite his brilliance, could make no further response. Again, Lenton Shakya Zangpo asked, "According to the tradition of the secret magical net, do you maintain that all appearances are male and female deities?" "Who would refute," answered Zurkungpa, "the validity of direct perception, to which discrete, inanimate objects appear?" "Very well, then do you not maintain that they are deities?" "Who can contradict the intention of sutras and tantras concerning the purification of discrete, impure, delusory appearances, which are perceived by sentient beings?" Thus, Zurkungpa eclipsed the sharp verbal arguments of the 4 students with his truly powerful answers. Just as Rahu eclipses the sun and moon with his hands. And he grasped them with the claws of his great compassion, which was wholly other-oriented. In this way, the propensities of the four students' past deeds were aroused, just as when Master Shura became the disciple of Aryadeva. They said, "Alas, it is hard to find such a spiritual benefactor as this, who possesses an unerring realization of the meaning of the greater vehicle, and is endowed with the brilliance that comes of awareness and liberation. And yet, if we go openly to him at this time, our master will be displeased. So, let us take a solemn vow to abandon that master of false sophistry by some means next year, and to associate with this mighty lord of yoga, who is like the point of a sharp sword cutting through the net of samsara." After swearing this oath, they went away. Then, as bees fly to lotus gardens, just so, when the next year came, they spread the wings of their past propensities and positive aspirations and flew, as if to a vast sandalwood forest, to the college of Deshik Gyawo. There, they became renowned as the Four Pillars.